power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Those guys are fun.
Six, five, four, one.
Deadline.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of Diplomacy Cast. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. My name's Eric Mead.
And my name's Nathan Barnes.
Nathan the Barnes.
I leave that out, actually. I pause for it, but I don't like to put it in.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. In this episode, we're giving Table Talk at least one episode break, as we've sort of run out of things to define, at least for the time being. But we're introducing a new segment, which we're calling Hot Off the Press, where we read some of your emails and respond.
I thought it was really clever.
A hot off the press?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited.
You hate it, don't you?
Kind of.
All right. Then we are going to talk about the country of Turkey in our Power Play segment of the day. And finally, we are going to interview
Doug Moore. It's going to be Doug Moore. I know this one. I heard that we're going to interview Doug Moore.
I was about to just say some stuff about how awesome he is, but...
No, I'm so excited about it. We don't need to say anything. Yeah. No, don't even...
Guys, listen
to the whole thing and listen to Doug Moore at the end, because...
Winner awesome. Of the best guy who is Doug Moore, and also some other stuff.
Probably the last World Diplomacy Championship that came from the United States, I think.
Oh, so you get to do it. You shut me down when I'm about to say... Wow, okay. If you have any questions, feedback, anything at all, please email us, press@diplomacycast.com, and please subscribe to us on iTunes and give us feedback on iTunes. We need it. We live on it. So, a lot to catch up on since last time.
Do you mean to correct all of our errors?
Well, yeah, there's that. Now that we've opened the floor to you guys, we've been,
opened ourselves up to critique as well.
Yeah, which is great, actually. We love it, and honestly, most of what we've been reading from you guys has just been awesome and terrific and super complimentary, and we really appreciate all the happy feedback, although we would love it even more if you posted it on iTunes when you subscribe. It matters. The more iTunes feedback
you get. Seriously, it's all part of the... I know that there's one error that at least 15 people have pointed out to us, and I think that has to do with TIFCON. It's TIFCON, right?
Yeah. We said in episode 1 or 2 that we thought that TIFCON was in Chicago this year?
I think we're just excited about WDC.
Totally not in Chicago this year. Yeah. DipCon is in Vermont. It's at Carnage in November. We're going to have some details on the specifics of that particular tournament up on our website. As soon as somebody who's working on DipCon actually sends us an email and tells us exactly what to post. But sorry for saying it was in Chicago, because...
We led you astray.
Totally not.
We're just, like I said... I'm excited for 2012.
Yeah. 2012 in Chicago is going to be awesome, too.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
But Carnage is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm told.
I guess. I know that some of the organizers there. They're fantastic.
I have to go.
Oh, because you are the reigning champion.
Yeah, I have to defend my title. Okay, what else? We've just been out there on the web. We've gotten a lot of great reaction to this. We've checked out some threads on, webdiplomacy.net. There's been a lot of talk, and I've actually participated a little bit in that. There's thanks to Babak for kind of spreading the word about us over there and writing us some nice emails. And we're definitely interested in getting you guys more involved as time goes by. They said there was a cool thread on BoardGameGeek.com that actually I think Matt Shields started, the little publicity
machine
that he is. Yeah, he's like, I'm on the show now. I'm going to tell everybody
I'm really
about it.
Everybody listen to me.
Yeah, and then of course we've been getting just some terrific emails over it.
That does remind me, I think there a lot of some of the feedback was like, hey, what about the online folks?
Yeah, we're starting to get some,
which is good.
But we're a couple of face-to-face guys. We both played online. We both used to be hooked on online. We haven't played very much in the last couple of years. We love that you guys who play a lot online are starting to listen to our show.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to try, I think, in future episodes, not only are we always going to be trying to incorporate the online perspective, but we're hoping to get some online people to interview here in the next couple of months. But we wanted to make sure everyone understood we're always going to probably fall back to the face-to-face stuff just because that's what we know.
Yeah.
And that's where our kind of expertise is, so we're going to slide into that a lot. But we're going to do our best to learn a little bit more about the online.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
It's competent.
We talk about face-to-face because we're better at it, and we talk about face-to-face because, I mean, part of what we're trying to do with this show, I don't think it's any big secret, part of what we're trying to do with the show is we're kind of trying to do a little bit of, you know, outreach to you online guys and maybe kind of bring the things a little closer together because they shouldn't be apart.
Yeah.
It's the same darn game. And
get face-to-face people doing online stuff and, you know, just all about, you know, getting the diplomacy community together. I think it's going to be pretty good stuff.
Exactly. What else?
I think we should read some emails.
You ready? This is exciting. A new segment.
I think I'm ready.
So we're calling this one Hot Off the Press, and it's a place where we read emails, and if you happen to have a better suggestion.
Anything, actually, at all.
For the name
any,
of this.
Just anything.
That might be the kind of thing that maybe you could email
to us. That would be wonderful.
As an example. But nobody did psychically know that they were supposed to do that and email us in advance. And so, we're going with Hot Off the Press.
Sweet.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's a little clever.
No, it's not.
It's a tiny bit clever. Because it's like hot off the presses, but it's like press. Like, they're sending to... All right. Our first email, we actually got several emails from the friendly Australians.
Who we did, actually.
Wanted to make sure that we plugged their tournament, because it is WDC this year.
It is.
The World DipCon. I'll read one of them. Hi, Eric and Nathan. We'll edit a little bit. I'll read one of them here. It's from Thorin Monroe. He says, hi, Eric and Nathan. Podcast site looks great, i.e. simple. Okay. I appreciate that. I have to say I was put off by the length of file requiring download yet to do it. Yeah, we've heard this from a couple of people. We're doing they are long. The shows are long. If I may make a suggestion on this point, if you subscribe to us on iTunes, then iTunes will just at its leisure just pick up new episodes as it has time to download them so that you don't have to sit there and wait for it to download, or some of your newer browsers, depending on how fast your connection speed is, it'll just stream when you click on them directly on the website. But
well, at the same time, we're also, I think we've said this once or twice, we're still learning, so they will get shorter, but they'll still probably always be about an hour and a half. 2 hours, not usually.
It depends
on how interesting it is.
It depends, yeah. I always like to, you know, two and a half hour podcast. You turn them on, you listen to, you know, we're only going to do one of these every 2 weeks or something, and so listen to them in chunks. Listen to 20 minutes, I don't know. Let us know. Give us your feedback and opinions on whether shows are too long. Anyway, he also writes... it would be great if we could just plug... He basically is asking us just to plug World DipCon 2011. He gives us a URL, which we are going to go ahead and put on the website right away. But check it out. It's October 1st through 3rd of this year in Sydney, Australia. It looks like it's going to be a great, unbelievable event.
They always do a good job.
Yeah.
They do it up.
I mean... I think I probably don't get to go. I really, really want to. I have a friend that just moved to Australia and is trying to convince me to like do a thing. It's probably not going to happen. But
Unfortunately,
if you ever wanted that excuse to travel to Australia, you may as well play some diplomacy while you're down there.
And they're great folks too. If you can make it down there, just let them know in advance, and they're going to do everything you can to really make it a good time. So check out the link.
Next one comes from, and I know I'm going to butcher his name even though I asked for help pronouncing it in an email. Maz Nugor is as close as I can do. That's what he told me.
That's a good college try.
Hey, thanks.
It's only incredibly embarrassing, but, you know, good to go. What's he have to say?
He writes, hi guys, good stuff here, even if it's rather lengthy. I would never have sat through a two-hour podcast if the subject hadn't been about my favorite power, Italy. Okay, so he's still writing about episode 3. And he says many pointers to take away, especially for people who are struggling as Italy. But I must admit that the importance of the RT relations was a bit overrated compared to the EF relations, which are equally important, in my opinion. Call me out a little bit, Nathan.
It's all right. It all depends on how you play the game.
I emailed him, asked him to give us a few more details on that, and he wrote me back with a really long, and we don't have time to read it here, kind of response to that. His basic point, and I want to get your thoughts on this, his basic point was that the EF is always coming for you next, if there is a strong EF, and so in the same way that strong RTs, after they kill Austria, are always coming for you next, strong EFs, same thing, just as dangerous, and you need to devote as much of your resources as you can early in the game to doing everything you can to discourage the EF. Thoughts?
No, I agree with that to a certain extent. Where we part ways is the RT tends to form, in face-to-face at least, it tends to form much more naturally than the EF, although the EF is a great alliance, and it happens a lot. There's always a much greater chance that there's going to be tension between the two than the tension between the R and the T just out of the gate. So I think okay. you should definitely focus on it. Should be aware of it. But I think you're better off devoting more of your resources, like let's say 60-40, mm-hmm. 60 to the east. You just tend to be in that sphere a lot, and the west doesn't usually tend to shake out as fast. I don't know. It's just my experience. Maybe.
Actually, interesting point that you're making there about devoting resources, because another thing that he says is another issue that got missed out is the difference between playing Italy in a face-to-face game versus an online game. Sure. I find it easier to succeed in Italy in online games as the time constraints aren't impeding your ability to talk to everyone, whereas Italy in face-to-face often finds himself rather low on everybody's need-to-talk-to list in the early years, unless he does something dramatic like Venice to Tyrolia to get everyone's attention. And it's a really good point when we're talking, you know, you've got to devote your resources to something, right. RT versus EF. You really don't in an online game unless, you know.
Right, absolutely.
You have all this time to just write and hammer on ENF that they're coming for each other and you heard that they hate each other and all of that stuff that you can do in an online game that you just don't have time to do in a face-to-face game. And so I think that is part of the difference. We were addressing it from a face-to-face perspective where you've got 15 minutes and what you really, really want the least probably is an RT. Yeah. So get after that with as much as you can.
I think it's great. Any more feedback like that, we love to hear different opinions, especially that online perspective, because honestly, we just, while we have some, it's not as fresh as it could be, and
we usually get our butts kicked online. Is what Nathan's trying to say.
Truth in advertising. You know,
no, I don't know. I did okay when I used to play,
I'm just saying it's been more than a few years.
Yeah,
so things have changed a little
for sure. Okay.
Last one.
This one just came in before the deadline. We just got it today, and we're recording this afternoon. But I love this email. His name is Dan, and he writes, I'm a novice diplomacy player, and I just learned how to play this past winter with a group of friends face-to-face. I play online quite a bit now, a lot with a group of friends, and sometimes with strangers. I just wanted to let you guys know that I thoroughly enjoy Diplomacy Cast, and the idea of playing face-to-face seems like a blast. See, that's the part I love the most about that one. It's just, it said everything awesome about how awesome we are, and exactly in the way that we're trying to be awesome. So.
You don't sound needy at all.
No. Thanks. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Dan. He goes on episode 4 when Matt was describing his revelation that he had a reputation for doing quote fun unquote things and everyone knew about it. It really made me laugh because a similar thing happened with one of my friends. For years, we've been playing a variety of different games, and I've always known about him that he gets really guilty if he screws someone over, and then if you call him on it, he apologizes and retreats from whatever he was doing. I used this to my advantage for years and accidentally let the cat out of the bag a couple of months ago. His game's improved greatly since he realized that it's true and everyone knows about it.
I've realized now why you like this email. Did you write this to yourself?
Yeah, I know. No, I made up Dan. I said, yeah, no, not really, no. I'm that friend. I'm actually not that friend. I don't know Dan personally, but people do the same thing to me in tournament diplomacy. They figured out.
I do that to you.
Yeah, they figured out that kick you. Like they've abused me so many times by just going, God, I can't believe you did that. You gave me your word you weren't going to do that, and you did that. And I'm like, oh, God, you're right. Man, how do I make it right?
I'm so angsty about this.
Yeah, it's true. It is really absolutely the thing that they used to pick on me for. So I'm trying to get better by figuring that out, too. Anyway, and then he has a question. He says, also, I have a question. When you play in person, how are the moves resolved? Is there a human judge or electronic? I've been trying to poke around my local gaming scene and try to get a face-to-face game together, and I'm not sure how to do the resolution of orders. Keep up the good work, Dan. Okay, good question. It's probably something that people that don't play a lot face-to-face don't do. We don't have an eighth person, and we don't have a computer present that we enter the orders into. Here's how we...
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while we'll have a judge, just if we have too many people.
Like, yeah.
But typically, at a tournament, there isn't a judge.
Right, there is a tournament director, which I'll get to in a second, but what you do is everybody takes turns reading orders, and traditionally you go alphabetically, so Spring 01 orders, Austria reads them, and Fall 01 orders, England, and Spring 02 France, and so on. And that person reads their own orders first. That's the most important rule of how you do this adjudication, because that way he doesn't get to see what anybody else did and maybe misread his own accidentally.
Not that we don't trust everyone.
But you read your own orders first.
Right.
If anybody doubts the veracity of the read or the correctness of the read or for any reason, you can just kind of like peek over their shoulder or say, hey, can I see that? It doesn't in practice come up very often, but I've certainly had to do it before for various reasons. Usually it's when the guy is reading his ally's orders and he kind of stutters.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait a minute. Yeah. Let me see that one. Or even when he's reading his own orders and he realizes he wrote Bulgaria to Bulgaria or something, and he goes, Bulgaria to Romania. Because those things happen. There is, however, at tournaments, a tournament director. And his job is to come over if there's any kind of an issue. And specifically if there's something that might be an ambiguous order, but might not be, if there's something that's, you know, it's ultimately a tournament director's job to decide whether an order is clear enough to accept or not. Right. Am I saying that?
Any conflicts are resolved by the TD.
Yeah.
So if it's not clear,
and
that's who makes the call.
And all tournaments all kind of have a list of house rules that they pass out at the beginning.
Yeah.
Not that anyone ever reads them. They're sort of like, terms and conditions.
They get read when there's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. You go back and go, oh, I wish I would have read this. Kind of like when you download a piece of software and you're just like, yeah, accept, whatever. Yeah, you can totally have my credit card number and whatever else you want.
Anyway, to answer Dan's question, we don't use electronic, and we don't have a person. We sort of have a set of rules that we follow, and that's how we do it.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess maybe one other thing for builds and retreats.
Mm-hmm.
If a lot of times, especially for builds, during the build phase, a lot of times we don't even get that formal about it just to save time. We don't even require people to throw their builds, you know, write the builds and throw them in the box. A lot of times people will just say, should we just play Show Your Neighbor? Yeah. And so then if you wrote a build or a disband, you just write it on a pad and just show it to the guy closest to you, and then he looks at it and sees what you wrote and takes your piece out of the box and throws it on the board, because there's not as many of them and it just goes quicker that way. Some tournaments are more formal and require you to throw them in the box. Retreats, same thing. Although a lot of times if the retreats are really, you know, there's only two of them and they're on opposite sides of the board, a lot of times we just kind of let that slide too.
The only thing that comes with retreats is sometimes there's the whole, you can't tell someone where they can retreat.
Oh, God. That's another thing. No. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So anyway, we hope we answered that email.
I think it's the over answer.
Well, anyway, thanks to everybody who wrote in. Send us lots more like this. We really enjoyed reading everything and all the feedback. Let's move on to our main section, Power Plays. In this week's Power Plays, because we're going to talk about turkey.
We're going to talk some turkey about turkey. It's good.
That was, God, we couldn't go 1 minute without a turkey. Well, all right. Well, hopefully you'll improve your game so it won't just be a turkey shoot when you're on the board playing turkey. What a
DMR. I don't have any more. You actually really, you really put a bullet in it. Congratulations. We're done with the turkey puns. That's great. God. But I'd like to actually talk about, what's it called? Diplomacy for a second, if you don't mind. Talk about the country of Turkey.
Yeah.
I actually don't mind playing Turkey. I think there's a lot of people that really think it's a difficult country to play, and they sort of get a little crestfallen when they draw that power from the box.
I think we've said that about pretty much every power so far, but yeah, you're right.
That's not true.
Well, we haven't done the France episode yet.
No. See, France, I'll be like, everyone's excited.
Yeah. It's true. No, some people find Turkey frustrating because you can get cornered when you're Turkey, for sure. I mean, probably more than any other country, would you say? It's a little easier to do. It's the one that people can just make up their mind that they just never have to deal with you. All they have to do is surround you and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really take that much. I mean, you can do it pretty easily.
Flip side of that, of course, is that if you do manage to sort of build yourself even a little bit of a position in a corner somewhere, you're impossible to deal with.
Well, you're at least incredibly annoying.
Incredibly, yeah. Nobody wants to do it. People talk all the time about how they have to dig out turkey, right. And nobody's like, oh, I don't want to go through the trouble of digging out turkey.
And yeah, no one
like,
says I gotta dig out, you know, Russia.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, I need to go put a bullet in Russia.
Russia can dig himself out with no problem.
Just not a problem. No, so that's kind of what's the strength and the weakness of that particular country. Is like it's possible if people want to just to kind of bottle you up.
Yeah.
But then you're there for a while.
Yeah. And you can be you have a lot
of staying, yeah, you have a lot of staying power. Mm-hmm. So it's also kind of nice to give to for a newer player just to kind of be in the game for a while. You're definitely going to be around. Same way with England. The witches kind of share that sort of
the security, but plus obviously similarly to England, since it's so far from the stalemate line, it's harder to solo.
Yeah.
You have to really have a plan really early on if you're going to try and solo as Turkey.
Just I don't know. There's some people I know of, heard of, that just could accidentally be on these boards and from out of nowhere can end up in a solo for lack of any clear plan in the early years.
Yeah. Yeah, there can be those people.
Yeah, hypothetically speaking, of course.
Yes. All right. Well, let's delve a little further in then. So early in the game.
Yeah.
Well, pre-spring 01, you've drawn turkey, got your pieces, there you are.
Yep, there you are. Corner. And what you wrote, you wrote at the top of your page, you said turkey, and then you put OS01 next to it, and right underneath that, you put con to Bulgaria, and then you just started your negotiation, because really, that's what you're going to do. You might as well, everyone knows you're going to do it. There's really no other valid opening for Constantinople. There's nothing.
Literally. I've never not written that order.
No, of course not.
Unless I misordered or something and I don't remember it. But yeah, 100% of them are Constantinople to Bulgaria, which kind of makes Turkish openings, which obviously we're going to get to later, a little bit of a drag to talk about. Constantinople.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's really only two pieces to talk about and really only one direction to go and one support role to go. I mean, that's just it. There's really not a lot of options with Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the spring 1901 moves are it sort of doesn't matter. I mean, it matters obviously, but it
see we very much differ on this. I think it matters hugely. Can it matter hugely? You can make or break your game in spring 01.
Yeah, if you do the all right. Well, let's kind of go around the board a little bit and talk about, because I think the more interesting thing to talk about with Turkey is what your opening negotiation strategy is going to be rather than your tactics. Because there are a lot of different ways to approach that, a lot of little things you can try and sell people on that are going to decide how your game's going to go.
Yeah, I think your first couple of years as Turkey are way more diplomatic than they are tactical.
Exactly. I guess that was my point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the risk of beating it into the ground, I guess we do still have to talk Juggernaut first, don't we?
Well, I think... You know, on the up point, I mean, we're getting out of the Juggernaut phase.
It's true. No, we still haven't even done the Austria episode.
But Austria, you don't get as much choice. Right. You just get a groveling role.
Right.
The first thing you're probably going to do is you're going to try and snag Russia and get that DMZ. You're going to ask for the Black Sea to be neutral, no matter what you're going to do.
Wow.
you're gonna try and grab that. And
so your opening negotiations, you're saying to every single Russian, are let's not go to the Black Sea. That's like your opening position.
No one actually says that, but that's really what's in the back of your mind. The worst thing, at bottom, what you want to get at minimum is that DMZ. It's going to come up in the conversation. You don't start there. You see if they're amenable to something else, but you're going to end up asking for them not to bounce there. Even if you're going to do a juggernaut, it takes a special kind of guy to go, hey, yeah, you take the Black Sea.
You know? You're surprising me in that you think that it's so advantageous for the Turk to not do that bounce. I don't know that a lot of players would agree with that. I mean,
so advantageous for the Turk to not do that bounce?
Yeah, if your goal is to try and achieve some sort of a peace with the Russian that involves not bouncing.
No, you're just trying to keep the Russian out of the Black Sea.
Okay, so if you can talk him out, but still the thing is, if you talk him out, where's he going to go? Armenia, right?
And you can talk about a bounce in the Black Sea if you want. I mean, like, you're trying to get either a DMZ or some sort of agreement that there's no Russian in the Black Sea.
Okay, but the more common thing, sorry, I'm gobsmacked here by your feeling about it.
I'm sorry, I see it now why you're confused. Not just a DMZ, like, all you're trying to do is keep the Russian out of the Black Sea. Okay. Now, it could be a bounce, it could be him not going there, but you're trying to keep him out.
Obviously. And so, are you ever the one who suggests the bounce first, or do you usually...
No, I usually keep it. I want him to say that, or her. Typically a him, Russians, they usually... No. I really want to get the feeling from that individual to see how likely it is they're going to work with somebody else. Because there are so many rushes that will come up to you, so we're bouncing in black, right? Because...
Right.
Or actually, my favorite, I'm going to the Black Sea, you can bounce me if you want. That's a personal favorite.
I never get that one.
Yeah. Well, you're not me.
Yeah. I should try and maybe Altoids before the game. I don't know.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. So, yeah, sorry to confuse you about that. But I think there's a lot of Russians that are going to come to you with that, and I would rather try and get the...
Yeah, okay.
What about you? Do you just walk up and say, hey, Black Sea?
No, I agree. I'm agreeing with you this far. I'm saying I don't like to suggest it because I always kind of like to go, well, I don't have to go there and see if I have a guy that wants to play nice. And in that case, I'm definitely willing, if I get a good feeling about it, definitely willing to not go there and trust that he won't either. I mean, of course, it's a total disaster. I think that's the main thing. It's such a disaster if you guess wrong.
It's a huge
disaster. If you're like, all right, cool. Because, I mean, I guess when you're Turkey, you'd like that fleet to start sailing out sooner than later, if you feel like you can, right?
Well, I'm sorry, which fleet? The Russian or the Turkish?
Your fleet.
Yeah, you'd rather...
You start with that fleet at Ankara, you'd rather go to Khan right away because you didn't have to worry about the Black Sea, because then you can go to the Aegean in the fall, and that's sort of the position that you'd like to be in. Just tactically speaking, right?
Well, just defensively speaking, you'd like to be there, yeah.
Yeah. Or give yourself the option of protecting Bulgaria and still have an extra fleet on the Black Sea come next year. But anyway, so I suppose that's what you'd rather do, but it's not always, I mean, it's usually not what you're going to end up doing.
Oh, no, it's the only, and just think about what you're, you know, mm-hmm. what that means. If Turkey shifts over to Constantinople from Ankara in 01,
mm-hmm.
even if the Russian doesn't go to the Black Sea, the whole board is going to be like,
that too.
What the hell? And, you know, you're going to be forced into a juggernaut just to survive, because the whole board is going to start treating you like one exists.
That's true. So then I guess the bigger question is Russia still your preferred ally in a vacuum?
Oh, in a vacuum? I don't know. That's really hard.
Because you said yes for when we did the Russia episode. You said, yes, when I'm Russian, I'd like to have Turkey as my ally.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
But for Turkey, you're saying, it depends.
It's really going to depend, because the Russian has so many more options. They're all over the board, and you can go places. And the reason that you want Turkey as your ally is because it's the most direct threat to you.
True.
And if you can get him going the same direction as you, holy crap, you have way less to worry about, and you can just worry about blowing up everywhere. Okay. With Turkey, you have this huge problem
having been the trapper and the trappee, you know, you can just get caught. So you want to find anyone, the best ally possible, to get you out of the freaking bottle.
Yeah, because a lot of times, those Easts, as we talked about before, will organize themselves into an everybody kill turkey.
Yeah,
you're one of the two targets that it can be.
I mean,
you know?
A Juggernaut is great, but if you're not getting a good bite in spring and fall in 01, you go with Austria, you go with Italy, you do whatever you can to get out of the box. Because once you're out, you have some, and that's what I think of, and I don't always know if people understand that. It's like, ideally, in a vacuum, Turkey's a whore. He don't care what happens. As soon as he needs that fifth piece.
Right.
Once he gets that fifth piece, he has options, and he can start moving and doing fun stuff and, like, wiggling into weird, you know, Adriatics and, you know.
And then the rest of the board goes, crap, we let him out of the box.
Inevitably. Damn it.
Why did we do that?
Why did we do that?
Yeah.
It seemed like such a good idea.
But that's your job when you're turkey at the beginning of the game. Your job is to be the turkey that they let out of the box for whatever reason. Like,
it doesn't matter.
So bad.
No,
I agree with that, actually. I never really thought about it that way, but that's a good way of putting it. It's like, just do whatever it takes. All right, so then I guess that leads us to Austria. You're not getting a good bite from Russia.
Yeah, go to Austria.
Go to Austria.
You like an AT, right?
I'm not crazy about it.
Okay.
I like it a lot better as Turkey than I do as Austria. Because in the mid game, it's just.
it's awkward.
It's not pretty for Austria. I mean, it can be.
I'm not a big fan.
In the short term, it can be really, really effective. Because in the short term, it's that same thing where you can fight Russia and Italy at the same time. They can't help each other, really.
Yeah, the long-term investment for Austria is pretty poor.
Yeah, unless he can turn somebody around or get the drop on you or something. Yeah. Like, one of you is going to stab the other, and I'd say that unless you're pretty confident you're the better player...
Yeah,
be careful with it when you're Austria, because you know.
Given, of course, what we just said, if he can let you out, take it.
Yeah,
right. I mean, that's the primary directive.
But as Turkey, I mean, in the very, very short term, it's your best way to grow, fast. I mean, talking even 01. You know, if you're going to build two in 01, which is pretty rare, it's probably because you're working with Austria. It's because he helped you.
Or he got boned.
That's true.
And you're sitting in Serbia.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point.
Oops.
That or he can help you up to Romania.
Yeah,
it usually doesn't happen the other way. You usually aren't helping him into Romania, you know, and sometimes he'll help you into Rum and then Bull ends up staying empty. But, I mean, if you're going to, for like 01, 02... You can't go wrong with Austria, Turkey, and you can ruin Russia's life in a real hurry. There is the question of what Italy is doing that whole time.
Yeah.
If you're working with Austria, there's every once in a while you'll get an Italy who's just like, oh, you guys doing your thing? All right, I'll just go west. That's cool. You know,
and then you're lucky.
That's great.
A lot of times what'll happen with Italy is he'll get to that four, like we talked about last episode, and then they'll kind of just like spin around and like this quiet spin cycle, and that's all right. But every once in a while, Italy will just like, oh, are you going to do your thing? I'm just going to, sail up underneath your junk over here.
Right, exactly. He'll kind of make a separate piece with Austria, and he'll say, hey, Austria, Turkey is going after Russia, and that's fine, but I'm just going to kind of not bother Austria and decide to bother Turkey at the same time, and that's the bad situation.
Yeah,
for
it's not so great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless your A is extremely loyal to you for whatever reason, and will just attack Italy.
Any Austria is going to take that. Could it be more ideal for Austria?
Exactly. Austria should love that. His ally is fighting you and helping you fight the other.
Yes, it's brilliant.
It is. So you have, that's the one thing I say you have to be careful about when you're doing an AT is what's Italy up to at the same time. I guess we just sort of moved on to Italy, which was on the list here, but
there's not really the IT. There's a lot of, the IT is interesting because there's a lot of people that have strong feelings on it.
Yeah.
They're, you know, the classic thing I've heard is like, oh, it's two fleet powers and the fleet powers can't, you know, they can't work together, blah, 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 which I actually don't necessarily agree with.
Here's as far as I agree with it. I would say that if you have what I would say is the most common 1901, where Italy gets a build and Turkey gets a build, and Turkey builds a southern fleet and Italy builds a fleet you've almost foreclosed it already.
Mm, maybe.
I mean, barring some, like, crazy fake deception war thing that you do, like, some real gambit that you can do. It's just tactically...
It is kind of badass to go into, like, the Tyranian Sea and the West with that and...
It's kind of
cool to do that because you're usually in Tunis and you're in the Western Med.
But it's one of those things where you've got to know the guy and you've got to...
Yeah, and it's only one and it's unlikely you will have...
You've got to know him. You just got to have a really good feeling about it. Yeah, exactly. So once there's two of each fleet in the Med, what are they possibly going to do?
Well, I don't think it forecloses it.
Especially the second Turkish fleet forecloses it. That's the problem.
I don't think the forecloses it is too strong of a word. I think you're really going to have to... You can make an easy argument that's like two people... It's just brinkmanship. You're like, well, it's 2-2. Are we really going to waste our time on this?
Of course you are. There's... What else are you going to do as Turkey with that second fleet?
Flip it up into the Black Sea. Put the other one into Aegean just to sit there. Use it to convoy across.
Yeah.
You can do it. I agree that it's not great.
So... I guess my main point then is an IT can work, but you have to be planning it early, and somebody has to not build that fleet to make it easier.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but I will, I just don't think that. I mean, my primary critique of it is that Turkey is characterized as a fleet power, which it's not necessarily. It can be. But it's not really...
Right.
Yes, it has to pump armies out through a narrow...
I've played very successful, very army-heavy Turkey powers, especially ones that are just going after Russia from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Just go up and up and up and up and just sit that one in the Black Sea and it's a convoyer and it just pumps them up. I remember fondly a game with Matt Shields where he just decided to start waving builds after he was out of armies.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. Anyway, I totally lost my train of thought. Yeah, Austria. Are we done on Austria?
Well, we were done with Italy.
We were done with Austria and Italy?
Yeah.
That's all we want to say about it.
Well, I think the Italy, like, you just have to decide that you're going to do it and you had a plan for it. Otherwise, what tends to happen, and I think you are right, that there is a strong tendency that IT sort of butt heads and wastes time. Yeah. So, you know... So those are your primary people. What are you doing with the West? That's really the question.
All right.
So we have these other three powers. I would say that they're pretty distant from you, and they should be low on your priority list. Of the three, I would probably talk with England just because it has some influence on Russia.
Yeah, and so does Germany. The conversation usually goes like the Turkey conversation. Yeah, you're going to bounce them out of Sweden, which might... although that might be worth taking a minute on there, the Germany thing. You talk to him, you say, are you going to bounce them in Sweden? Because I feel like some Turkey players, if the answer is yes, they're more likely to want to work with Russia. And some Turkey players, if the answer is no, they're more likely to want to work with Russia. Which one are you?
That's a really good question. I think it just depends. Like, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. I think it's much more about the diplomacy in the first couple of years than the tactics. So simply because I may smell blood doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to pile on the Russian. It just depends on how the rest of the board is, because it's not great for me to have Russia evaporate. It's not good for the board at all to have Russia just crumble. Because I'm going to get Sevastopol, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm. Yeah,
maybe,
I suppose.
But it depends on how fast it goes.
Yeah.
On the other side, you know, if I know everyone's piling on Russia, I should at least be ready to move. Because otherwise, I'm not going to get anything. So, I don't know. I don't think I have a clear answer to your question.
If your hunch is that there's going to be an England-Germany, for example, which is bad for Russia, typically, are you...
I'm probably likely to... Because what I'm going to do with that information is convey it to the Russian, so if people it's more forces up north. I get a bone with the Russian, and then I have more options.
Yeah, I think I... tend to not try and attack the Russian right out of the gate. Like, if let's say hypothetically they just came over to me and they were like, hey, we're going to do a Western triple, or we're going to do an EG, and we're just going to attack the heck out of Russia early on.
Sure.
I don't jump him in that case, because if he falls all the way apart fast, it's usually not
bad.
Good.
Yeah, and it's bad for the, like I said, it's not just bad for me, it's bad for the whole board,
mm-hmm.
because somebody is disproportionately gaining there,
yeah.
and it makes things all wonky, and then you're suddenly like, there's a leader that everybody has to pounce on, but it's only 1902, and like, it's just not good. But you know, sometimes I will jump.
Yeah.
I will jump them.
Yeah.
You know, I just might have a really strong ally in Austria. Or
that's true.
And
that's
I'm just like, you know what? Let's just roll because I'm going to have to beat this other alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. I don't know.
So you're talking to England a little bit about what their plans for Russia are. You're talking to Germany a little bit.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Mostly what you're trying to figure out is what the hell's going to go on in the West.
Right.
Because, honestly, the balance to most of the West is Turkey. So, like, a triple tends to balance out with Turkey. Mm-hmm. You know, an EF or, a combination of the two tends to balance out with Turkey because they just can't get to you. And for so many years that you tend to be, like, this counterweight on the other side of the board. So you really need to know kind of what's going on over there.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've been sitting in that corner at, like, 3 or 4 to 1905 while this monster Western triple rolls across the board.
Sure.
And all I, you know.
And you always make the joke, oh, it's okay, we'll be an Eastern quadruple. We'll
just stop exactly.
But, of course, all you're doing is just sort of leaking units further and further toward where you are claiming they're going to help somebody. And actually what you're doing is just encircling whoever.
Yeah, maybe. Or at all of them.
Exactly.
Which is kind of fun. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I'm just going to be right 4, 7, 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There's one thing I know we're jumping around a lot. There's one thing I don't feel like we talked about enough, and it's trying to get a handle on the interaction between Austria and Italy early on in the game, because I think that's an important. I mean, if you're going to work with Russia, you'd probably rather have Italy on board, right?
Well, you don't want an AI and a juggernaut just facing off.
That's what I wanted to talk a little more about.
Really.
So the 2-on-2s are bad for Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to, I mean, this is just my opinion, but everyone's going to quickly realize that there's a stalemate there. And stalemate's the wrong word. I'm sorry.
It's going to go slow.
It's going to go slow.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, the three of them are going to go, you know what? We're not getting anywhere. You know, it'd be easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, there's some sort of moral neutrality in, like, taking out Turkey. Like,
sure.
People feel less bad about
sure.
it. I don't know why that is. But, I mean, if everybody... I really have been in a lot of situations like, well, I don't know what to do. Well, you know, I guess we could kill Turkey.
Right.
Yeah, I guess we could kill Turkey.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of, like, qualms about it. It was like, oh.
Yeah, I guess it's just because sometimes when you're playing Turkey and three people just jump you out of the gates, you're just like, oh well, so much for that
yep,
game.
Yeah, yeah, well,
you kind of take it like a man.
Generally. I don't know. There does seem to be that. Whereas if it's Austria, there's a lot more pity around it.
You know,
you've definitely had that conversation.
America
right?
loves an underdog.
Yeah,
I
was like,
yeah.
oh man, you know, just let's give him another couple. Let's give him a bone or something.
Yeah.
You know, like he's tried really hard or like whatever.
Yeah.
No one says that about Turkey. Unless
it's
like, God, can we get a bigger gun?
Yeah.
This guy? Can we
get him done by 03?
Seriously,
somehow?
Can we just get this guy out of here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what's so interesting about. But yeah, I think it's very valid that you want to make sure that AI isn't just going to be some sort of balance to your RT.
Because the correct thing, that's what they're supposed to do if they think
you
guys are going to work together.
Yeah.
Italy is supposed to go, oh no, I'm not getting in on this.
I'm going to
work with Austria and put a stop to this. That's what the whole board wants them to do, and the whole board will leave them alone as long as they're doing that.
Well,
to your juggernaut,
and
right?
it's their advantage for two reasons. One, they don't get eaten, and two, you know, that slowdown and that, like, not the inability to get, you know, make gains quickly
mm-hmm.
shakes up the alliances. So that's it's in every way good for everybody involved. So when it doesn't happen and Italy just decides like, I'm gonna stab Austria, the whole thing is
if Italy just puts stabbing Austria as a non-starter in your opening conversation with him, then what do you do diplomatically? I mean, if you go to the Italian, maybe we should all just pile on Austria. And he just goes, no, I'm not doing that.
That makes me a little bit wary, because there's the other side of the coin. Like, if it's that strong of an AI, I'm sort of obligated not to, like, right. kick Russia.
That's right? The thing.
Yeah, so it's hard.
So, because, yeah, if you feel like you've got a strong AI from the beginning, they are coming for you 100% of the time.
Because they got nowhere else to go.
They're doing the Lepanto thing, they're, you know, and maybe they're coming for you and Russia. And, yeah. And you know.
Yeah, you're stuck there.
So be it. But, so... I don't know exactly what I'm trying to phrase my question. I guess,
how do you prevent that from happening?
If you don't prevent that from happening, what's your sort of next thing? Okay, there's an AI.
No, you go to, I mean, like, you know, you already know the answer to this. You go to Russia and you say, well, we have to, you know, RT up until we break this thing. And then you just pick the weaker one, probably the one that didn't say something as silly as, I'm never going to stab X,
mm-hmm.
and just work on them.
Excuse me. Well, the other thing you can do, I guess, is you can go to Austria and say, all right, fine, doesn't look like Italy wants to attack you from the beginning, but maybe we go after Russia. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, no, that's perfectly valid.
I think I've done that before, and I don't know if it's gone well or not.
It just depends. I mean, if there is that strong of an AI, that's not going to serve you very well.
Yeah, it can't be good for you no matter what. And so, yeah, I guess Plan B, if that exists, is just to go, okay, I'll go work with Russia.
Well,
it's going to be a slow game.
It's going to be a slow game. Let's go around the board really quick and just like let's tick off the things you're supposed to be doing in 01.
Can I just do that?
No, I mean just like quick.
Like totally more?
No, just like really quick. So you're Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you need to do is find a way to get out of that box. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what you do, who you do it to. Doesn't matter. However, you know, you need to make sure that there's going to be a balance between your AI relationship and your Russia relationship. So figure out, diplomatically speaking, what everybody's doing. Mm-hmm. Do the same thing in the West, because whatever happens over there is you are the counterbalance to.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're doing, you know, X, RT, EF, you know, whatever, you're going to... Yeah, that's really going to dictate how you roll with some of these things. I mean, like, because you need to use every weapon in your arsenal. Western Triple's coming. We can't sit around here and just do an RTAI sort of, you know, fist bumping contest. You know, so that's really, you needed to be doing all three
of those
things.
You want to so paranoia about the Western Triple when you're
Yes! Oh my God!
That's
yes.
probably true. That's yeah, probably true. Yeah.
I've never talked about Western Triples more than when I was Turkey.
Okay.
So those are the things that you really should be focusing on. And, you know, I think that's important to wrap up. So, how do we specifically do that with our pieces?
Oh, okay. So, yeah, we can move a little bit on to openings here. So, you had a theory that we were talking about a little bit before the show about how important the Spring 1901 is for the Turks specifically.
Right. Well, I guess what I was trying to say, and I'm having a few minutes to really think about it, mm-hmm. it's Spring 01 can be... Screwing up Spring 01 for Turkey can be devastating.
Sure.
I mean, you make the wrong move, specifically if you move on Russia.
Right.
Without having all of the knowledge and just it not being the right move for mm-hmm. a variety of reasons, your game is boned.
Yeah.
You are screwed in a lot of ways. You're stuck in Armenia. You're in either Armenia... Fleet Ank and Bulgaria, all your pieces pretty much separated.
Right.
Or even better, no, that's pretty much the worst. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's the worst. I mean, that's the thing is, a lot of times people will make up their mind, all right, I've decided to attack Russia. Right or wrong, the just moving to Armenia and then bouncing in the Black Sea isn't actually a particularly terrible. Good attack.
Yeah. No, it's terrible.
So
unless you get in the Black Sea, you should not be in Armenia.
Yeah.
It is bad news bears.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's my thing on it, although yeah. I see people do it the other way a lot, and even people who aren't terrible at diplomacy, yeah, I see them go, well, I'm not going to get the Black Sea, but I still want to attack this guy, so I may as well go to Armenia anyway.
There needs to be some
I think that's a terrible mistake, and I never do it. I'll only ever jump Russia if I've already talked him into not going to the Black Sea, because then it will work. Then yeah. It's actually going to be something.
You need some momentum behind that.
Yeah, that's what I think. Otherwise, I'll wait till fall. otherwise
it'll be
just...
pretty extreme. Like maybe you know the guy.
Mm-hmm.
There can be extreme circumstances, in a vacuum, you don't do that unless
you know exactly what his opening's going to be, and it's awful. I guess maybe like if he's opening north or something.
He's pushing to like north and Prussia, and he's going to move fleet rum, you know, like something like ridiculous.
Yes.
So then maybe it's fine.
Okay, so and we already established piece number one, Constantinople goes to Bulgaria.
Right.
I'm not actually even going to say anything more about that.
Oh, good.
It just does.
It just does. There's really no point.
So you have two more pieces, and the thing we were just talking about is that fleet in Ankara is definitely the most contentious of them, right? It either goes to the Black Sea or... I guess really it either goes to the Black Sea or it goes to Constantinople. That's it.
No.
Because
it doesn't, because Smyrna needs, it either goes to the Black Sea or holds.
What, the fleet on car?
Yeah, because you want the army in Constantinople.
I don't understand.
Army Smyrna.
Yeah, Army Smyrna. No, okay. If you're not bouncing in the Black Sea, you actually want to work with the Russian, you've decided not to bounce in the Black Sea, you're still not going to Constantinople right away?
Probably not. I mean...
What? That's the whole point of it. The whole point of not bouncing in the Black Sea is it gives you that free season to go to Khan and then go out to the Aegean right away, or at least stay in Khan.
I guess if you really believe that you're working with the Russian, you're not worried about Bulgaria.
Right.
And then, so Army Smyrna holds.
Or Smyrna goes to Ankara just in case, or something. It does. At that point, it doesn't much matter what Smyrna does. Yeah.
You'd rather have it on Smyrna, I guess. I don't know. Can convoy it later.
Right. Exactly.
You can tell how often, radio listeners, how often we do this. Because we're totally not
thinking about it. No. How often you do it. Don't put that word in my mouth. I do it a lot. Because, like, if I'm seriously committed to working with the Russian, why not just let the board know about it and get the tactical advantage? You know, the board's going to know anyway.
Yeah. I would say that's showing more of my hand than I'm usually comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. That's just
the
best move. It's way the best move because that extra fleet out there earlier completely blunts any kind of anything AI can do without being much more risky.
I know.
Because
I get the tactics of it. I think for me, the showing my hand outweighs the tactics, but that's just how I play.
So if you want to, I'm so confused now. If you want to work with the Russian, You're still going to bounce in the Black Sea every time, or sometimes you'll just hold and let him go there, or what?
I'm never going to let him go there.
Okay.
I'm probably going to do something silly like stay there or do something because I guess this has worked for you, but I have been on the receiving end of like that's an RT and just having it being you just getting dismantled. I think.
Well, yeah, sure.
And if I'm going to do that sort of, I'm going to Constantinople, the Russians in the Black Sea and the Russians coming out through Constantinople, because, you know, that's where I'm thinking. If I'm going to do that, that's the Russians coming out too, because we're going to go crazy.
Switching sides for a moment, if I'm Russia and we've done me and the Turk have done the thing where I move to Romania right away, and he moves to Constantinople right away, and nobody touches the Black Sea. The line that I'm selling to everybody else on the board, whether I mean it or not, the line that I'm selling to anyone else on the board is, yeah, we played nice in Spring 01, but look where my fleet is now. Right? It's only aimed at Bulgaria at that point. And I can make that case to Austria. I can make that case to anybody in the north who I freaked out by demonstrating a juggernaut early on. And it's actually occasionally true. If I've done that as Russia, if I've opened to Romania as Russia, then I can actually at that point just go to Austria and say, hey, let's go after Bulgaria. There's so many things.
People actually talk to you after you put a fleet in Bulgaria, into Romania. Yeah. People actually think you're a legitimate.
It's the Altoids. I'm telling you. Yeah.
Seriously. I would I would totally mock you for that.
Wow. Okay. All right. Fair enough. I don't agree.
I mean, you just have a little more faith in people than I do. I just don't. And so for me, putting a, this is a Russia conversation, but for me, putting a fleet in Romania just blunts so many of my choices that I don't see what the advantage is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just terrible for me.
It sounds like you actually like the bounce more often than... You don't start by talking to the Russian about the bounce, but you end up bouncing most of the time.
I would say I like going to the Black Sea most of the time. Okay. I think that's a better way of
whether or not the Russian chooses to do so also.
Right, I think that's really my ideal. I want to be clear. Which is, you know, the other thing about it, like, the other reason that I'm not too excited about moving that fleet to Constantinople, mm-hmm. the only way I'm doing that is Russia and I are going to do something like Matt Shields crazy. You know, we're going to, like, swap Khan and Sev. Mm-hmm. We're going to, like, we're going to pump, like, fleets out into the Med. It's going to be dirty and, like, just
filthy. Let Russia take Constantinople right away in the fall. That's
yeah. always and I, fun. And one. I will, yeah. you swap it for Sevastopol. You're, like, yeah. you're in Armenia, right? And yeah. you just, let's swap them out.
Yeah.
Let's go. And let's yeah. get dirty. That's the that only works. Time I'm really doing that.
That works.
And I'd have to either be... I either have to know the guy or have a good feeling about the person. Maybe just, you know, maybe other people on the board gave me that impression, or maybe I'm just drunk. Or
yeah. yeah.
feeling punchy.
I gotcha. All right. So you then you're more standard, you don't know the guy so well type of thing. Is you're probably.
We're probably bouncing.
You're probably bouncing. You're probably, given that you're probably bouncing, you're not going to Armenia with that other army. So you're going to do the sort of default Turkey opening, which yes. is Constantinople to Bulgaria, Smyrna to Constantinople, which makes it so you can support yourself in place if and not have to trust anybody. And you go to the Black Sea to bounce an yep. impossible Russian.
Yeah, like 85% of the time the opening, I would say. I mean, yeah. that happens. That's pretty much it.
And we are advising that if you want to go to Armenia, make sure that the Black Sea is also going to work.
Yeah,
make sure he's set up somehow. And
it's like kicking a bee's nest
yeah.
and then just like sitting on it.
I agree.
You know, it's just like, ha ha ha, I've really pissed you guys off. Stab me more.
Right.
Make it miserable.
And
also, we're advocating 0% of the time should you ever be in Syria.
There is the one where you go, the one, wait, where you go to Constantinople. Ankara to Constantinople and then Smyrna to Armenia.
Yeah.
The purpose of that being you want to leave the Black Sea open, but if Russia betrayed you and took the Black Sea, you still have slightly more options at that point.
Oh, rather than Ankara.
Right.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. They're, I think that's legitimate.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're just doing that as, hey, we agreed, and I'm putting a little bit of force behind it.
Right.
You know the other reason?
I don't think I've ever used that, but I've seen people who like a lot.
I will say the other reason I really like the army in Constantinople, and I'm really loath not to, mm-hmm. is, you know, just fall 01 in the Balkans can be such fun, and I really sure. want to be able to follow up into Bulgaria.
Oh, definitely. If you talk somebody into supporting you into Romania, or into supporting you into Greece, or just some crazy junk
because,
like that.
And
like,
as we talked about a little earlier, your path to success is really to that fifth spot. It's yeah. through the Balkans. So,
and if you can get it in 01, get it in 01.
Yeah. So
you
I think
usually
that's
can, but actually, that seems like as good a transition as any. Openings or, you know.
That's I thought that's where we were going.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I like it when you call it out, though.
Yeah. going forward from that opening year, trying
sure.
to get to 5, trying to get to 6, where are you trying to get to in the mid-game, I guess?
Well, and I think a lot of people focus too much on Greece. They really want Greece, to, you know, as the Turkey. They're like, I want to have Greece. It's, you know, it's part of my mm-hmm. protective sphere. I'm trying to rebuild the Athenian League. I don't know
sure,
what people are thinking.
Sure.
But, you know, and you can see why, but I think it gives you a little bit of tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
So Greece isn't necessarily the answer. It's convenient. It's nice. It's great. But, you know, Serbia is also delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So is Romania.
It sure is nice to just have, like, the Black Sea behind it and then an army in each of Romania and Bulgaria.
Yeah. Kind of good. Mm-hmm. Kind of great. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can really, especially Romania, that's like, practically, I mean, you're a sneeze away from owning Sevastopol at that
yeah.
point. I mean, it's great to get into Romania.
Yep.
So I would say you know, almost answering your question.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? I'm finding the next piece, and it's whatever way I can do it.
Yeah,
and
finding the weak spot.
Finding the weak spot, and I know, you know what, early in the program, I think you said something along the lines of, if you're going to solo, you need to have a plan mm-hmm. early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that to a certain extent, but I think in your 02, 03, you're trying to have the option to have a plan.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you might not be able to start forming your plan yet because you just know I want dots.
Yeah.
And
I think it's one of the powers where it's just like, you can be a dot whore mm-hmm. in the first couple of years mm-hmm. and it's legitimate. Whereas there's a lot of other powers like the dots really don't matter as much for Turkey. Seriously.
The most important thing is that the builds that you make with any games that you make are working together. What you don't want to do as Turkey is be too spread out most of the time. You're just sort of like building ring after outer ring after outer ring of just more security and impenetrability if you can help it, you know, and eventually, like, if everything's going really well, then those inner rings closest to your home centers can start to empty out and just sort of move outward. But
how many times has this happened to you as Turkey? You're doing well, you're at like 13 to 15 and like you have this sort of amoeba of pieces because you build like three or something ridiculous as you do late in the game, and they are so far away from your front line.
Convoy paths are really important.
Exactly.
Especially if you're heading medwards. Convoy paths are really important. Not getting a couple of pieces cut off somewhere is really, really important.
Yeah.
Probably more so than most things. Like if you say you're attacking Italy and you manage to get some army up on the boot, but then but then you lose the piece that convoyed them there for some reason, like you lose the Ionian Sea. It's a disaster.
Yeah.
You'd rather have never gone there in the first place if that happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think that's it's nice that you highlighted convoy pass, because I think that's another thing that I see players not utilizing as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really tempting to just keep pumping out all those armies. It's also really tempting for some people to pump out fleet after fleet. But that being said, you're trying to figure out ways to get armies that are like a year and a half away from your front line up quickly. And
definitely.
Really making sure you have the fleet convoy pass in place and a little bit of support for the key components, because really, like that scenario describes a nightmare.
Yeah, this is especially true of the Russia-Turkey alliance, which is the Russia-Turkey alliance. Obviously, a lot of what's good about it is that it has the potential to last a really, really long time. Like you can just make this tidy little, I'm going south and into the Med, and he's going north and into Germany, and we don't have to bother each other that much as long as we've managed to sort of get a few pieces off of each other's front lines, or else you have like some kind of a long term like weird security bounce that you're doing over and over. You know, if you manage to find some way to keep working with him, that one can last a really long time, and you're expected in that alliance to be just sailing and sailing and sailing, just going further and further. I mean, you should be eyeing France by this time, you know?
Pretty early. Because Italy's going to get...
And it's not as hard as it sounds.
No, no.
I've ended up in a lot of Marseilles and Spains and stuff when I'm doing well as Turkey. The getting up to places like Germany is hard.
That's hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Mid-Atlantic isn't that hard, because there's something satisfying about, like, a Turkish piece in the Mid-Atlantic or the Irish Sea. I love the Irish Sea. It's Turkey.
Yeah.
It's just like, hi, here I am. I've made it.
Surprise.
I've arrived.
Yeah.
You know.
To back up just for a second before we leave the mid-game, because we're starting to get to sort of end-game stuff here. We keep saying the Austria-Turkey alliance usually doesn't last that long, but by the mid-game, what does it look like, and then how can it last, I guess, is my question.
Wow. I don't...
I don't know.
They do sometimes.
Yeah.
But you're starting to... it's starting to become strained. In that,
right.
Actually, a better word is contrived. Like, they're not realistic. You're starting to do it just because you believe in the idea, and it doesn't make the most sense for you. Your pieces aren't being optimized.
Sure. Probably you're way fleet heavy and he's way army heavy.
Right. And likely you're both going to get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
the problem. It's no fun to be a 10 army Austria that realizes that if I'm not going to stab my ally, the only thing I get to do is try and get to like Belgium.
Yeah.
Or something, because that's what you're going to do you're going to be mixed up a little bit in Russia. You're going to be mixed up a little bit in Italy because you presumably killed them. The only places to go get really hard at that point.
They just stop up Piedmont. They stop up the north, and then they lock Germany, and you're sort of like, oh,
mm-hmm. And somehow you're expecting, as the Austrian, you're expecting the Turk to just be nice this whole time. And when he gets two builds in Italy, not just build two armies and gut you completely, like just walk through the Balkans and into your home, which that's the fear of that alliance trying to do it in the long term. So probably if you're into the mid game to late game, that alliance is probably already broken down. Same with Italy. I mean, although in the Italian one, you're probably most of the armies. You're all over Russia.
And, well, it just makes more sense.
And a bunch of the Balkans, and he's most of the fleets, and he's way into France. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the IT, if you've gotten that far with it, it's so much of a pain in your ass as Turkey to sort of, like, mobilize against the Italian that it might continue to last. You're going to end up in a large draw, probably.
Yeah. So I'm thinking back now as we're sort of getting into the end game here. I'm trying to think back on I've soloed it as Turkey sometimes.
Yes, you have.
So I've had some notable tournament victories as Turkey, and for the life of me, it just seems almost impossible right now. Luck in soloing with any country. We've said it before. We'll say it many times again.
But if you're playing with good players, that's always just the way it is. Like, ideally, have we ever said this? Have we actually sat down and said that with competent players, no one should solo?
Almost ever.
Because everyone knows what they're doing, and they don't allow
with competent and unemotional players. I played with very, very good players who just get mad at somebody and allow a solo to happen for that reason. You know, you don't have to be a bad player to permit that.
Okay, fine. We should have a show about that. We could get a couple of people.
Some emotional people?
Well, and some unemotional, some cold, calculating Vulcan-like players. I mean, we can do it. That's actually really good. No, file that away.
All right, it's filed. Episode 12, 13, somewhere around keep coming up with show ideas. anyway, so doing it as Turkey, tactically speaking, strategically speaking, gosh, you got to go really far. That stalemate line is really far away. It's another one like England. You can get to, there's a lot more 15s, 16s, and 17s that wonder what might have been than 18s.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, you're mostly hoping for a little bit of luck.
Yeah.
Like, you need, the problem is you just need so much time.
I would say, as Turkey more than most powers, if you can stay in an alliance for a long time, be looking to stay in an alliance for as long as you possibly can, if that alliance is rolling, and then stab at the very end of it, you know, because any help you can get to Marseille or Spain, or to get to Munich, or to break
those lines so that you have a chance. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes an alliance can, like, hobble a portion of the line for a couple of years so that you can maybe seep through a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly kind of feel, and I could be wrong about this, I feel like, not that, and just fair disclosure, I don't think I've ever soloed as Turkey at a I'd have to look. I'm pretty sure I haven't soloed a Turkey at a tournament event. I feel like the places where I've gotten the closest, it was actually through out of the Med.
Sure.
The North is the easiest to lock up, and Germany tends to lock up pretty quick.
Yeah. I think if you're going to get it through St. Pete in Norway or something, that has to be one of those things where someone's trying to help you for some reason. No one in their right mind lets you get there look like a real solo threat.
It's also, at the same time, it's also very easy to lock up the Med, but I feel for some reason, by the time that it's Turkey doing it, the people that are really more competent at it, the Frenches and the Italians, they tend to be totally destabilized at that point.
Right, yeah, they have to be dead,
and,
really. Yeah.
You know, you're just dealing with England, who may or may not be, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I feel like that just happens to be, I don't think that's a general rule at all. Mm-hmm.
It's true, yeah.
I feel like.
It could be Germany. You could just win the entire East plus Munich. That could happen.
You've got St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg's a Western center. You've got Warsaw, Moscow.
You're really going to put St. Petersburg as a Western center?
It is.
All right.
You've got all of Austria, you've got all the Balkans, you've got Warsaw, Moscow, Sevastopol, all of Italy, and then Munich. I guess even then, it's probably more Marseille than Munich. If you've got those 17, then
you've done so much like crazy stuff in Italy.
Sure. Yeah, so you don't even need all of Russia necessarily if you have Marseille, Spain, Portugal, something. Oh, yeah.
Anyway. You know, we sound like experts right now. The problem is
we're trying to
could be the guy who's trying to mentally add slowly but surely.
Okay,
I'm sure it's you.
Okay, St. Petersburg is an Eastern Center. Thanks for your feedback on that. I really enjoyed that. All right, anything else? Any final thoughts?
I think we're done here.
Just going to come down to the sanctimony at this point if we don't cut ourselves.
Well, you know, one thing that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Last, you know, maybe parting thought.
Parting thought.
Hey, and this is really your thought that I'm stealing. It's okay to be small. You want to talk about that?
That is true. Turkeys can have bad starts.
Yep.
I mean, you should probably try and build one, you know, but starts where you don't build at all are probably a little harder to come back from. But even then, it's not a death sentence. Turkeys have to be patient. A lot of times they have bad starts. They build one, they hang out at four, maybe even three, then back to four, then three, then four. And then all of a sudden they get big. And I've seen this game enough times and I don't exactly know why. I mean, I guess it's just the thing about how it's hard to take their home centers.
I love it.
But you can be patient and you can be opportunistic and your game is not going to, I mean, like just the last episode we did Germany. You really can't do that with Germany.
Oh no.
If you don't keep growing or at least grow most years, you're probably not going to win the game because they will and they'll surround you. Turkey, that doesn't matter so much because when people are on their way to killing you, they can frequently get distracted and you can change sides a lot of different times as a three center turkey and just sort of cause chaos. And then all of a sudden there'll be that one turn where you can just sort of take advantage of it and just get really big. I think you were like 4, 7, 9. Yeah. I've seen those. I've been those turkeys.
I saw a turkey the last time I played, I think.
Yeah, they're better at coming. Yeah, you were. I remember that game. They come from behind a lot better than I think any other power on the board. So be patient as turkey. Obviously, try and grow if you can.
But this just goes back to the general philosophy. Be a whore. Mm-hmm. Find a way.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't find a way this turn, it might be okay. Yeah. The only thing that is a death sentence to you is if just everybody on the board agrees that you've got to go. And that's, you know.
And they stick to it.
And they stick to it. But you they don't.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
if you're doing
your
job, play from behind, play to be small, or at least live with being small. It's not that big a deal. Yeah. And you'll do okay as turkey. But I would say the longer a game goes that you're still in it, almost always the better it is for you.
Right.
Because
if they actually do take you out, that means that other people have gotten organized because there's nothing to distract you. So, like, you still have a chance to, like, get all that time. It's unlikely that, like, say, England has exploded and made, like, it's gotten humongous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably still have time. Anyway, I think that's a really good thing to remember about Turkey. And try really hard. No matter what happens, don't get in a situation when you have three near all armies, because it just takes two armies to keep you in there.
Yeah, half a fleet.
Have a fleet. Please don't disband it, because it's really sad to have Austria and Russia park an army in Armenia and Bulgaria and then just walk away.
And do a little dance. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't be that guy. You're right.
Well, you know what? This is the time. It's the time that I say the thing that I say, which is we should have an interview now.
Okay, we'll have an interview now, but I have a thing that I like to do too now, because we're interactive now. We're on the internets and tubes and things. And so if you have any feedback on or any questions about what we just said, if you disagree with us, if there's anything you want to add to the conversation, any way that you play turkey, send us an email. We'll read it on the next show, probably, if it's good and interesting and you spell words right and stuff. But all right, guest interview, here we go.
All right.
joining us now.
Absolutely, at this second.
At this, well, by the time they hear it, it won't be this second anymore. But joining us at a second that was now for us.
I'm not subscribing to your temporal dictatorship.
All right, fine. Via Skype from the Washington, D.C. area, the great Doug Moore, winner of countless tournaments and...
I'm sure you could count them, but recent tournaments, that's what's important.
Yeah, winner of the most recent tournament that happened in the U.S. just last weekend, DixieCon, and it's 20th year, I believe.
Is it 20? Is it actually 20?
I believe it was 25, actually.
See?
Yeah. Oh, 25th year it is? All right. And Doug Moore has won three of them, including this most recent one. Doug Moore, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I love what you guys are doing with this. I think it's a lot of fun.
Thanks. And congratulations on your win. And so I guess our first question is, why do they keep letting you come to DixieCon?
I don't know. You'd have to ask David Hood that question, because he sends me email, you know, every year. Are you coming? Are you coming? And then I just show up, sometimes late, sometimes early, and have a good time. Getting a plug for DixieCon, it really is a great tournament. If anybody ever wants to go to a tournament that is really free and easy to play,
yep,
that's the one. It's just a blast. You know, we stay up late gaming with open, you know, different games all night long for multiple nights. It is a hell of a good time.
It's only three boards for the whole weekend. Still, is that true?
Yeah, it's Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning.
So an easy schedule. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I went when I lived on the East Coast a couple times and always had a really great time at it and haven't made it back since I moved back here, but it's a good one for sure. Maybe take us through a little bit of kind of your path to conquering DixieCon yet again.
Yeah, or just anything, like, what happened? Give us a lowdown.
Sure. There were three boards for round one. This being the 25th anniversary, David had recruited a bunch of the all-time greats of DixieCon, if you will. Oh. So people who had won in the past and who had more or less stopped playing, you know, right, due to family or whatever, who had retired, basically came back to play. They didn't play every round, but they did play on Saturday. So you actually had a pretty high level of competition for some of these rounds.
Oh, wow.
And it was a lot of fun to see some of these guys come out and play and, you know, push pieces on the board.
Sure.
Now, Friday night, I drew Germany, okay, which is among my favorite countries to play, in particular because it touches everybody diplomatically. You have a reason to talk to everybody, and I find that in a game where I get to talk to everybody and spend a lot of time chatting, I tend to do better. And I soloed with Germany in that round.
Oh, so the Friday night solo.
Do you ever find, there are a lot of people a little hesitant about the Friday night solo for a little bit, like, oh, wow, maybe you don't want to put a target on it. Do you ever actually consider that, or do you actually just, you're Doug Moore, you don't care?
I say, damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead, get the solo, because it's so hard to solo. I mean, right, if you have an opportunity, you just need to take that.
The reason, for those who are listening who don't know, that some people are sort of superstitious about soloing on the first round of a tournament is because they feel like everybody tries to kill them for the rest of the tournament, which is right, kind of true. Did everybody try and kill you for the rest of the tournament?
Everybody tries to kill me anyway.
Right.
that is part of the problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're trying to get you anyway. No, you're going to have a target on your back. There's no question about that. But, you know, it's kind of, I think it's an honor. It's a, you know, a nice badge. It's like people want to kill you because you soloed. Well, okay, I'll take that deal. Because I soloed and you didn't, and you want to solo so bad you're trying to kill me. You're not focusing on your goal,
right?
Which is winning the tournament.
and also on the flip side of that, you get an awful lot of points for soloing a board, and sometimes just soloing and getting killed for the rest of the weekend, depending on the structure of the tournament, can be enough to win a tournament.
Yeah, you know, depending on the scoring system. But, you know, ignoring the scoring system for anybody who's out there, if you have a chance to solo, you should take it.
For glory, if nothing else.
Yeah, they are a little bit too rare. There's that superstition out there, and I just wanted to... Yeah, it sounds like...
No, there are players who will say, oh, you know, I'll just take a good draw, you know, I'll set myself up, I'll fly under the radar.
Right.
But, you know, I've seen people who had solo opportunities pass it up, and then they just get blistered the rest of the tournament, and they do nothing. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they soloed and they got blistered the rest of the tournament, well, at least you soloed, maybe you won the tournament.
Sure, and sometimes they'll punish you anyway for, like, being at 16 in a three-way draw or something for the rest of the tournament, so you might as well take the solo at that point.
You can't really win.
That's right.
On your solo board, without giving us like the year by year play by play, what was sort of the winning kind of the coup that got the solo done? What happened? I mean, I think people who
got mad.
Yeah.
Who got mad? That's what I want to know. Who got mad?
Well, the dynamic on the board was you had, just my philosophy a little bit is, you know, to keep as many players on the board as you can to encourage more friction among the players. The more moving pieces, the more opportunity is there for, you know, for somebody to get mad or make a mistake or, you know, whatever happens. Two players had actually been eliminated, and which was unfortunate, but, it didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Italy and England were out of the game.
Okay.
I was allied with France, and the French player and I had a really good alliance. We were having a lot of fun. He overextended himself significantly in the south, and the opportunity, you know, and I was giving him dots because I was growing really rapidly through Russia.
Okay.
So, you know, I gave him back Belgium and I gave him Edinburgh, just to keep us, you know, relatively even. And then he fed those dots into the south. But he was really overexposed, and I'm actually pretty frank with people that I'm working with that if you leave yourself wide open, I am going to stab you.
Yeah.
You might as well just get ahead of it, you know?
You know, there's no reason for deception on it. I mean, you know, if I can take two dots off you and you're, unless you have a key position or something like that that needs to be held, you know, and I've got a solo opportunity, I'm going to take that.
Yeah.
Looking at that regardless, and simultaneous with that, the guy who was playing Turkey stabbed Austria. And the Austrian player just got mad and pulled his dots off the stalemate lines. And, you know, I rolled south and took Romania, Budapest, Sevastopol, you know, not Sevastopol, excuse me, Vienna. So I had three dots across the line.
Wow. So it was kind of grinding down to a 2-on-2. And then the guys on the other half, one of them stabbed the other one he shouldn't have. And
your ally happened to be overextended, so...
Yeah,
my ally was overextended, and I would have probably just grinded out in the West, regardless of that, because I had Moscow and Warsaw, and he was so overextended, once I moved on him, I was going to get three or four dots the instant I moved. It was just the timing needed to be right, and once I got him sort of over the line in the East, in the South, excuse me, then I think he would have probably just been way too far to do anything. And so I had a build going. So, you know, I made this move when I was at 10 dots.
Okay. And then you just kind of forced it from there, huh?
Yeah, I went from 10 to 14 to 15 to 17 to 18.
Wow. Nice. Going back to something you said that you touched on briefly, the thing about sort of being honest with your ally about, hey, give me an opportunity, I'm going to take it. We've talked a little bit about sort of contrasting styles of diplomacy and maybe a little bit the East Coast thing versus the West Coast thing. I've always found playing on the East Coast that people are more frank about that, and they don't feel like you have to be in an alliance for the sake of being in an alliance, and people are much more of the style of, we're going to be in this alliance as long as it's good for both of us, but don't fall behind. You know, it's your job to ask me to stay even if you want to keep having this alliance. Any thoughts on that?
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that the East Coast used to be a lot more cutthroat than it is.
Okay.
The players, they haven't necessarily mellowed, but I think that the skill level of the medium level players, if you will, has increased to the point that, you know, if you're going to be cutthroat, they're going to recognize it fairly quickly. You know, there used to be a lot of, you help me in the spring, I'll help you in the fall, and then renege in the fall. That would go on, and that's punished now. I mean, if you know, early on, if people think that you're going to play that way, they'll you know, they will turn on you quick. And to that degree, I think the European style of, you know, flipping alliances very quickly has had a positive impact out here.
Sure.
But yeah, the East Coast is a lot more frank about that. There's not alliances for the sake of alliances. There's a goal that you typically fight for. Let's you and I go take out so-and-so, and, you know, then we'll reevaluate where things are going.
Yeah, yeah. And to keep that a little bit, the thing about balancing it out, like if you want to have that long-term, do you find yourself just talking to your ally a lot about, you can't have this because if you do, you're going to build two and I'm not going to build and then you'll stab me? I mean, is that, am I describing?
Yeah.
That? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do. I think you have to have a conversation about likely growth. You need to be talking every season, you know, making sure that you're coordinating your activities, of course, goes without saying, but you also need to be talking about what your builds are going to be if you have builds, right, and what you're going to do with those, so that if you do see something that's untoward and you're not ready for it, or it hasn't been discussed in the conversation, you know they're coming.
Yeah.
At least that's how I approach it, is I want to know what you're building, because, you know, if you put a fleet down when you said you're putting an army down, unless there's a really good reason, I know what all my units are going to be doing. Mm-hmm. They're going to be pushing back to defend. And, you know, and I say it's the same thing. If somebody catches me, you know, with my proverbial pants down, they can grab me for two or three dots, and they do so. That's my fault. That's not their fault. That's on me. I left myself wide open for it.
Well, you know, everyone should be trying to win the game. And, you know, it's hard to, but it's an interesting philosophy. I mean, on some levels, there are players that absolutely don't think of it that way. I think that's more what you're describing is sort of a more nuanced and probably experienced point of view, which goes to what you were saying on the East Coast. There's been a, I think, just influence from Europe, and just a lot of the skill base has gone up over the years. So it's a little bit less. I guess we're going to use cutthroat.
Yep,
I think.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, 5 years ago, it was significantly more cutthroat.
Mm-hmm.
8 years ago, it was even more cutthroat than it would be. I mean, when I really started playing tournament diplomacy in 2003, it was extremely cutthroat. And now you have people who are settling for larger draws once they feel that there's a solo, there's no solo opportunity. They won't push the game. They'll end it. You know, it's like, well, I don't need to cut anybody out of the draw because that doesn't ultimately matter. What matters here is, you know, the result is a non-win. And so they don't care about the draw size as much.
Do you think changes in scoring system have anything to do with that?
I think so. I think that draw-based scoring systems tend to lead to draw whittling, which leads to eliminations, which leads to cutthroat play.
Right.
Lead-based systems are, you know, have their own impacts, and the European scoring systems, you know, they lead to, you know, stop the leader immediately and crazy play in the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you see any of this sort of behavior in the getting back to Dixie? Did you have any large draws your second round, or was it just more? Yeah. Did you have more luck? Sorry, that's not the right word.
Well, there's an element of luck, I guess, or guessing, if you will, when you have a 50-50 and you guess right and they guess wrong. My second game, I was in a three-way draw.
Mm-hmm.
I was France, and you know, it was, there were some really good players on the board, and they had a lot of fun, I think, but I was very patient with France and just waited, you know, sort of inexorably moving forward, which you can do as France. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
As long as you don't get jumped right away.
Yeah, as long as there's no some, yeah, you're fine.
Well, I mean, personally with France, I mean, just about every single time I play the game, you know, people talk about these exotic openings, do this, that, or the other thing. I just support myself to Burgundy, and if anybody has a problem with it, bring it.
Right.
You and Nathan.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff I could do, but I'm going to do this.
Because it works. It keeps Germany out of Burgundy, and if Italy went to Piedmont, you can say, well, good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm furiously scribbling notes here, of course.
Well, there's no other way. I mean, I don't know.
I've been terrible with France my last few games, but anyway.
I do the same thing with Germany. I have, an opening set. I go to Denmark. I go to Kiel. I go to Ruhr. I pretty much do the exact same thing every game.
Yeah.
It has to be pretty extraordinary. There has to be some crazy element going on to kind of change those things. Last round, any more exciting things there? You played... England?
This year had a special round where Saturday night the all-time greats who qualified played together on a top board, and a couple of the people who qualified decided they didn't want to play on the top board, and that actually had a four-way draw in it.
I was
Italy in that one.
Oh, who are some of these greats? I'm just wondering if I recognize any of these names.
You surely would. Mark Franceschini was there. Jim Yerke.
Oh, nice.
Let's see. Carl Wilmer.
Really?
Yeah.
He's fun. I like Carl.
Yeah. Oh, it was a lot of fun. It was a little tough because, we had two boards of, and to be an all-time great for Dixie Con, you need to finish in the top three at 1 year, and then you're in the Hall of Fame.
I think I did. I'm not sure, though, but anyway.
Well, you didn't show up, so you weren't there.
Where the hell were you?
So, I ended up playing with quite a few of the same people. Which wasn't too bad because, as France, I didn't manage to really irritate anybody. I just kind of grabbed my dots and saw that I could get to 16. I couldn't get to 18 as Whoa. France. And so I was like, okay, whatever you guys, whatever draw you guys want, I'm okay with at this point.
Wait a minute. You soloed on Friday night and then Saturday morning you woke up and saw a position where you could have gotten to 16?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, why are you good at this game? What is your secret to diplomacy?
Well, I don't know what it is.
I don't know. You can figure out a lot of different things. I try to keep things, first of all, I try to keep things fairly simple with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys can probably attest to this. You both played with me multiple times. I used to be significantly more aggressive than I am now. I'm a lot more patient than I used to be. And I think that has helped my game immensely, just because I can see opportunities developing a lot further in the future and just build towards those slowly. But it's a little bit of a mindset. I mean, you do well when you're looking to win the game and not just get in a draw. Because if that's all you're doing, then, that's the best you're going to do because you're not going to count your dots. When you're at six dots or something like that, and you're starting to enter the mid game, where are you going to grow? Who are your long-term enemies? Who can you work with? You need to kind of think about those things and you need to think about them very quickly and make a decision and then sort of go that way. And what I find helps me to be effective is I don't spend my diplomacy time thinking about that. I've already made up my mind. I spend my diplomacy time trying to get the board to orient in that direction.
Yep.
Right. Rather than vice versa.
It's better than... Right. You're essentially, and this is something I don't know if I do, but I definitely like to advise people to do, have a strategy, follow the strategy. Even if the strategy doesn't work, you should have a plan and be following it. You might have guessed wrong, you might have read the board wrong, and you might be in not the best position, but definitely be working every single turn towards that goal.
Yeah.
And you're going to do better more times than not.
It's a big point, and it's way easier said than done. To already know what you want to accomplish in the diplomacy phase when you get up to go start talking to people. That's the trick to tournament diplomacy.
Yeah, you want to... I mean, I'm not talking details. They're not like, in 3 years, I would like to be taking, Belgium from Ruhr and Picardy. Just generally, like mm-hmm. Doug is saying, mm-hmm. I think it's good advice.
I want to do everything I can to keep these two guys from working together. I want to keep this guy on side, I want to, etc.
Especially important when you end playing certain countries like Turkey.
Okay.
We're just going to talk about it a little bit. Okay. I do want to talk about it a little bit because we're talking about winning, right? And how do you win?
Sure.
How do you win in a country that is, it seems almost like it is just literally put on the board to almost win and never quite. The dynamics of the map make it really, really difficult, as we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, Turkey, of all the powers, I guess maybe Austria as well, given the lack of fleets, it's you can see it coming. You see the yellow blocks moving forward, you know, bit by bit by bit. I mean, I've never soloed this turkey. I've gotten to 17 and 16 multiple times. And, you know, it's that last dot. It's getting Munich, or it's getting around, you know, and getting Portugal or something like that.
Right.
Marseille. You know, you just can't do it oftentimes. The way I think you solo is turkey is that you do not eliminate players. You keep them on the board to mess up other people's stuff. Because if you just, you know, if you're just a rolling steamroller, you know, and you just plow through Austria and plow through Italy, and you eliminate them right away, you know,
that's a four-way.
You will not solo. No. But if you can keep, if you can keep Russia around as maybe a minor power and Austria around, and they're essentially being your janissary, or working with you to some degree, even though they know that they're going to be eliminated, but maybe they want to have fun, whatever it is, you just have to feel that out. And I think that's what you need to do. Or alternatively, if for whatever reason you can go grab one of those key dots early and hold it and then backfill the rest, you should angle to do that.
Yeah, that's, we talked about that a little bit in the other part of the show, the encircle the dots that you eventually intend to stab for, and then just try and hang on for dear life and hope one of the ones cross the line is one of the ones you get to keep. I think there's definitely something to that with turkey.
Well, a lot of players just don't count to 18, and they ought to. They ought to be looking every turn at who's, you don't have to do it early in the game, obviously, but if you've got a player at 9 and they're holding Tunis and Munich, you got a real problem in that game.
Yeah.
You need to focus on that.
Yeah, it's really not that far. I mean, it's they're halfway there. Then they're right. 2 across the line. It's like, it's something you should, people should be looking for if they're going to be able to at least spot the solo threats. It's already something of a, it's already a concern. You know, if it's going to be a full-fledged threat, I mean, you just have to keep an eye on that and just be aware and be counting those dots, not only your own, but, you know, other
powers. Everyone else's.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
One question I have, we spent a lot of time talking about really the initial sort of the birth of the Turkish Empire. So for me, my stance was really whatever you can possibly do in 1901 to get out of the box, you should be doing. You know, and traditionally, like you were saying earlier, like you have a standard opening and you kind of do that standard thing every time. Obviously, with turkey, we're not really talking about openings, but I think the philosophy is, like, do whatever you can possibly do to get some traction as turkey. Would you agree with that, or are you someone that really thinks that there's probably a more likely path to success through a line structure?
There's two ways that turkey tends to get out. They, you know, wholesale sign on to an alliance that takes down a power, and that'll get you out of the box. Or you get something that comes from the West and you just sort of wait and then make your move as the West moves forward. If you get like a Western triple, turkey's in prime position.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. I mean, and maybe this is why I don't solo as turkey. But, you know, I am actually more aggressive playing turkey than I am playing Germany, for example. Yeah. Because I am just desperate to get Greece and to get my fleets into the Med. Because I feel if I can get to 5 as turkey, then I'm in really good shape.
Yep. I think that's how you have to be. We pretty much are all in agreement on this, which makes for boring podcasting.
do you guys tend to prefer to go north, or do you guys like to go south? I like to go south because I like the fleets and the Med. I think that you're in a much better position ultimately if you go that way. But
I think Nathan's grand unified field theory of turkey is that it doesn't matter. Just whatever, whatever's 5, then 6 is probably 5.
Whatever. You got to get to 5. If 5 is Sevastopol, Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, Greece, I don't care what it is, you need out.
Yeah, and what often happens when you're turkey is that everybody does the rational thing and just decides not to let you. And all you have to do is just find the one guy you can talk into letting you out of the box, and then you grow, and they go, why did we let him out of the box? Darn it.
Because you're a fool. Yeah.
I will do just about anything, you know, in the game. To
right. All right.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad. I got
excited there for
maybe I thought, you know, maybe Doug Moore, somebody's like, oh, I always, you know, I always go for the juggernaut and, you know, roll the dice.
No, I don't think so. I think you just have to, you know, find out who the weak link is, and, you know, maybe they make a mistake and pounce on that, you know, whatever you have to do. I guess the other thing you really need to do is persuade Italy or Russia to leave you the hell alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I think Italy should almost always go west. I think Italy is more of a Western power than an Eastern power.
Interesting.
Forgiveness to Eddie Bersan, who, you know, created the Lepanto, yes, which is a very interesting opening. I think it's extraordinarily slow and leaves Italy vulnerable and extended to just a tremendous degree. Not just because we're talking about Turkey tonight.
Yeah, no, it's good. We had Eddie on. He talked about Italy. We had him on for Italy because of that. And he definitely had some opinions. Interesting. I don't want to get off on the track, but the Western approach is very interesting.
Yeah.
If France is out and Italy's got, you know, the southern three, Portugal, Spain, and Marseille, Italy's in just phenomenal shape. And then you can go send a couple of fleets west and work with Austria to take Turkey out.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too. I've had good Italy's that
I couldn't disagree more.
But
that's all right.
Yeah, Nathan's an Austria killer.
Hey, sometimes killing Austria is the right way to go, but I don't like getting involved in a big army battle when, you know, you might end up with a huge slew of white blocks coming your way. Mm. And then, you know, you got Turkey still fooling around over there. The solos I've had is Italy. Most of the time, I really have taken virtually no Austrian dots. On two of them, I took no Austrian home dots. It was all in the West.
That's very different.
One more on the Turkey thing, since we're in that neighborhood again. Do you consider the two-on-twos to just be something to be avoided at all costs, like a Russia-Turkey versus Austria-Italy? Is that something that you always prioritize, making that not happen, or...
I think that most of the time people see an RT and they like flip out and you end up with, you know, an AI and a Western triple slaughtering you. So I try not to do that. I've tried working with anybody. If the only ally I can get is Russia, then I'm absolutely going to work with him. If the only ally I can get is Italy, then that's who I'm going to work with.
Sure.
The two-on-two just, I think, leads you into a stalemate situation where you get killed because the West ends up with a 2-on-1 and resolves faster than the East.
Exactly.
And, you know, then they're in better position than you are.
And I think Turkey almost disproportionately gets the raw end of that 2-on-2 deal. It's either Austria or Turkey, and a lot of times it's Turkey is the one that just gets shafted because it's like, oh, this 2-on-2 thing didn't work. Well, we can kill Turkey. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's easy because... once you take Bulgaria, then they're trapped back literally in the box and they can't do anything.
Yeah, it's just like,
and they're usually the ones that are playing defense disproportionately in one of those things, instead of Russia, who's sort of leaking into Austria over time.
I do want to ask Doug Moore the question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we won't make you talk Turkey.
Yeah, I know. It's good. We agree on a lot of stuff, and it's good to hear, to be validated a little bit by a recent tournament winner. We wanted to know, we like to ask people what you feel your biggest mistake is, or at least your favorite mistake that you've made at a tournament diplomacy event.
I did think of something here just now, which is Turkey related. So, this is actually, and it's DixieCon related too. It's from my first DixieCon. I was playing Turkey and there was a new player playing Austria who I had, you know, I didn't know any of these players at this point, but he was a relative newbie. And Chris Martin, who all the listeners may be familiar with.
Yes, they are. They better be.
Was playing Russia, and I made the mistake of listening to Chris Martin. And he ended up owning all my home centers, and I ended up holding Tunis and Naples with two fleets. And you know, between him and a solo with France on the other side, it was like I was holding two dots, one was holding 16.
So you as Turkey turned into the Western stalemate line?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
So that... And the mistake that I made actually was building an army and a fleet rather than two fleets. Now, that was tactical in nature. I believed Chris, and I ought not to have. Not because it's Chris, but because of the situation on the board was not telling me that, and I overruled what the board told me diplomatically.
What did he sell you?
He just told me that, you know, we would continue to take Austria down and he would assist my army out. If I had ignored that, I had two builds. So I had Greece and I had Bulgaria. I didn't need his help.
Oh, this is in 1901.
Yeah, this is early on. Okay. I mean, I didn't need his help, and instead he saw an opportunity to basically block me from getting large, and he took that, and then he and Austria flipped on me just as you were talking about, and, you know, boom, I was toast.
Ouch.
Yeah. Wow. See, then the lesson there is, you know, maybe listen to the board and not Chris Martin.
No, maybe always listen to Chris Martin. We'll just ask Chris Martin.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the lesson is don't listen to whoever it is, and, you know, read the board. You know, it goes with my philosophy of keeping it simple. You know, keep it simple. When you're looking at the board, if it's telling you that you need to do something, then you should do that.
Yeah.
And if that's going to have diplomatic repercussions, just accept that and then talk to the person right away and explain why you're doing what you're doing, rather than build incorrectly and try and talk people into doing something. You know, I would rather get somebody mad at me for the right reason than try and keep somebody from attacking me when I'm out of position with units or whatever.
Right. One is a position of strength, the other is a position of, you know, mild desperation. So, yeah. You know.
Desperation does not work well in dip.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't work out very well.
Great for me. What are you talking about? Yeah, but it's all I ever have.
You can't ride that pity wave forever, Eric. It's not going to work out. Well, I wanted to just get any... What do you think? Parting thoughts?
Yeah, well, what do you got coming up? Are you doing any more tournaments this year?
Well, we'll have Tempest. The Potomac Tea and Knife Society will have our annual tournament the last weekend of September, first weekend of October. I think it's the 30th, 1st, and 2nd this year, so it's a little earlier than normal. So I'll be there for that. I don't know what else I'll be able to get to this year.
Okay.
You know, it's a little tough since my son was born to get out to tournaments all the time. But, I was in Austin for the Invitational.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And DixieCon, which was, by the way, the you know, for anybody who is invited down the road, it was a really high caliber of play. It was really a lot of fun. And, you know, I've been playing some online dip a little bit here and there just to...
Anywhere in particular? Are you on the judges, or have you branched out?
I'm on the judges. I was actually trying the Facebook out a little bit, and I think they need to come up with a mechanism to keep people from dropping out of the games, which is the same problem the judges have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I play a little bit in, you know, Cat 23 as well, which is... you know, hand adjudicated typically.
I remember having a conversation, I don't know why this just popped into my head, but like years ago you and I had a conversation about how the difference in the style between playing online and playing face to face is something that, like, because of just your experience and your career and everything else, just writing a persuasive essay to somebody is something that's just like really suits your style well online. Are you still finding that?
Yeah, no, I still play very well online. I don't play as much online as I did. I just, you know, both. I like face-to-face better than online play, although I enjoy online play.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is really about your writing and how persuasive you can be. And it's also volume of emails.
Oh,
And if you can dedicate a lot of time to it, you'll do well.
Yeah. That was a big thing for me, as I found I always like was compelled to try and just outwork everybody, and I ended up just writing, you know, 20 pages a week of press to people, and wondered where all of my time went.
Right, where all your time went. And, you know, then you also, I would, sometimes playing a little too much online dip will hurt my game and face-to-face a little bit, just because I'll spend more time analyzing the board than I normally would. If somebody is an online dip player looking to go to a tournament, my best advice would be play a couple gunboat games right before you come, and give yourself no more than 3 to 5 minutes to, you know, look at the board and submit your orders and be done with it.
That's a great piece of advice, actually. Yeah. You can't overthink it. You just don't have time at a tournament, which is why you don't have time.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you spend all your time thinking about the perfect tactical situation, you won't be diploming. And that's what you really need to be doing, because the game in face-to-face, it is really about knowing your board position and reading the players and getting a sense of what they're going to do. Yep. Now, experienced face-to-face tournament players are going to have a mild advantage because sometimes they know the personalities. But not, frankly, not that significant one. I mean, the number of times I've seen a face-to-face player who ought to know better do something is, well, every
sure.
game.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. You know? It's a little bit, there's a little, I think mild is the right way to put it. There's just sort of, I've seen this person play before, and there's, it narrows the amount of sort of predictable
yeah.
things that are going to happen, but it's about reading the people. I mean, mm-hmm. you still read them the same way. You're still like, oh, this guy is just about to turn around and stab me. So I do think it's right. only, I don't know. That's just my
yeah, it, and knowing a person's tendency doesn't necessarily mean that you're more likely to work with them either. It might mean that you know exactly how you're going to take them apart, and that might be what you want to do.
That's absolutely correct.
This person doesn't get too upset when I take them down. I'm going to go with them.
So I therefore will take them down. Yeah. Exactly. But no, I think that's great practice. And when I first learned to play diplomacy, I mean, I was a college student. Mm-hmm. I bought the game because it sounded interesting, and I'd seen a demo at Gen Con back when it was still in Milwaukee. So, you know, my friends and I taught ourselves how to play, and we played, and the judges were around. And so we would start playing on the judges. And then, you know, I played for a long time before I ever played in a tournament, and I got plenty of enjoyment out of it. And tournament play has really enhanced that. That's really what I enjoy more now. I house games and online games are okay, but tournament diplomacy is so much more fun because the talent level is so much higher,
and
everyone's out for blood, and you get to hang around with folks and drink a couple beers and yep. play some other board games, and I enjoy that a lot.
I actually feel a little bit betrayed right now by the fact that you said a couple.
Yeah,
but it feels like you're cheating if you're only drinking a couple yeah. beers at these things.
Well, it's a couple over, you know, a long
time. A couple an hour for yeah, 48 hours, I hope is what he means.
No. No, but it is really fun, and I think we've got that thing going. So are you going to go to Worlds next year? In Chicago?
In Chicago? Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, I'll be there.
Sweet. Yeah, we'll find a way. Absolutely. That's going to be a pretty big event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, is there anything else, Doug, you want to tell us? We want to tell our listeners.
Parting shots.
Parting shot I would give is, you know, when you are playing the game, always don't look for where your next dot is. Look for where your 18th dot is. And, you know, from there, figure out how you're going to get to that 18th dot. So don't just grow to grow. Grow for a purpose.
Sounds like Doug Moore Diplomacy 101 right there. That's why we keep.
So don't dig into it too much. Then you're like, wait a minute, but how do I do that? No, no, no. Just do that.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Doug, for
yeah,
exactly. Thanks a lot for taking some time to come down here, chat with us, and all that good stuff. We're really appreciative.
No problem. Happy to do it.
Okay. Thanks, Doug. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye. All right.